In Psalm 15, David, who writes this psalm, asks a question. He says, O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell on your holy hill? What David is asking when he says that is, he's saying, God, who gets to go with you? Who gets to live in your house? That's what he's getting at with this imagery, with the phrase, sojourning in your tent. Who gets to live with you in your house? Who gets to be a part of your household? God, who is your family? And the rest of the psalm is him describing the characteristics of somebody who is considered God's family, considered somebody that sojourns with God. So let's go ahead and read the rest of this psalm, because this morning I want us to look at six characteristics of God's family. Psalm 15, beginning in verse 1. O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell on your holy hill? He who walks blamelessly and does what is right, and speaks truth in his heart, who does not slander with his tongue and does no evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord, who swears to his own hurt and does not change, who does not put out his money at interest and does not take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall never be moved. We'll keep it short and sweet this morning. From Psalm 15, six characteristics of those who are in God's family. The first one we see, if we look in verse 2, is that God's family lives blamelessly. He says there in verse 2, he who walks blamelessly and does what is right. What we see here is actually kind of two sides of a coin. We see the idea that he's blameless. There is no accusation you could make against the family of God that would stick, because he does no wrong. He avoids evil. But he also does what is right. That's the flip side of the coin. He doesn't just avoid evil. He pursues what is good. He seeks what is right. He actively pursues right things and justice. And the fact is, when God's family acts this way, it only produces good. If we look in Titus chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, Paul writes to Titus, show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching, show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. When we live blamelessly as part of God's family, there's two main major things that does. One, it shows consistency with our teaching. If we are teaching and preaching the gospel of Christ, and then we're living inconsistently with it, we're undercutting our own message. But if we live blamelessly, if we walk what we talk, if we practice what we preach, then it shows consistency with our teaching. But just as Paul mentions here in Titus chapter 2, it also leaves no opportunity for accusation. If you live in such a way that you live blamelessly, then anytime someone brings an accusation against you, there's no opportunity. There's no opportunity to find guilt in us. And so we see the benefits of living blamelessly. If that's the characteristic of God's family, well, what do we need to do? Well, first, we need to remove the bad, right? We need to remove the things that could be accused, the evil in our lives. We need to remove the things that stain us with sin. In other words, if we have something in our lives that's worthy of accusation, you know, our reaction might be to hide it, right? Well, we don't want to be accused of this, even though we're guilty of it, and so let's hide it. Let's just hide it away and act like it never happened. If we have something in our lives worthy of being accused, we don't need to hide it. We need to get rid of it. We need to cut it out of our lives and dispense with it. We need to remove the bad. But then on top of that, we also need to look for the good. We need to find the good. We need to find opportunities to encourage. We need to find opportunities to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God if we wanted to look at Micah chapter 6. And there's a lot of different ways that we could apply this, right? Think about our communities. How often do we look around at our communities and seek opportunities to do good? To do good for those who are poor or homeless or downtrodden. Those who need help in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our relationships. Or what about in the church here? There, especially in a church of this size, there are abundant opportunities to do good, are there not? There are abundant opportunities to find places to serve and to help. But the thing is, to do that, we have to know enough about each other's lives to know where help is needed. We actually have to get in each other's lives, and we have to let other people get into our lives, and it's messy. But if we want to find opportunities to do good, if we want to live blamelessly, we have to get in each other's lives. And we have to seek opportunities to do good. Let's continue in Psalm 15. At the end of verse 2, he says, he speaks truth in his heart. He does not slander in his tongue there at the beginning of verse 3. The family of God speaks truthfully. It's a characteristic of the family of God that they speak truthfully. They don't compromise the truth. They don't bend the truth. They stand firm on the truth. And again, we see kind of two sides of a coin here. In verse 2, at the end, he says he speaks truth in his heart. The family of God values truth in the heart. The heart is the throne that truth sits upon. And once truth has planted its seed there and it continues to grow, there's a value for truth. And so there's not a desire to bend the truth or change the truth as long as we don't give ground in our heart. But there in verse 3, who does not slander with his tongue, there's also a refusal to speak falsehood. So truth is valued in our heart, and there's just an absolute refusal. I will not speak falsehood. I will not lie. And so what do we need to do as family of God if we want to speak truthfully? Well, first we need to examine our heart. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 12, verse 34, that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So if we want to speak truthfully, where's the first place we need to look? We need to look at our heart. What we value, what we hold dear to us, what we hold in high esteem, that's what's going to come out of our mouth. That is what is going to come out of our mouth at some point. Out of the abundance of our heart, our mouth speaks. And so we need to examine our heart. If we want to speak truthfully, it begins in the heart. But secondly, we need to examine our words. Before we speak, before we type, before we hit send or share, do we consider what we're planning to say and why we're planning to say it? If we're sharing a story, have we considered its accuracy, its truthfulness, its helpfulness? If we're sharing an opinion, have we considered its importance, its relevance, whether or not it's actually needed, what good it might do? If we're sharing some information, have we evaluated our sources? Those of you who have ever taken an English class, Know the importance of vetting your sources. When we speak, we are responsible for the words that we say. So we need to examine our heart to make sure that it values truth. And we need to examine our words, where they come from, what their motivation is, and why we are saying them. If we want to be a member of God's family. If we continue in Psalm 15, continuing in verse 3, David says, "He does no evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend." God's family interacts lovingly. They seek to do good and not evil towards others. They seek the best interest in the people around them. We know Matthew 7, verse 12, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." We call it the golden rule. But it's interesting, Jesus says, "For this is the law and the prophets." He encapsulates the old law in this. We're to treat others with the same respect and the same love and the same concern that we would want from them. We interact lovingly. When Jesus was asked the greatest command in Matthew chapter 22, he says, "Love the Lord your God with all your mind, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength." And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, on these two hang the law and the prophets. Again, he points to the old covenant. He says, this can encapsulate the whole old law. Love God, love others. And so if we are, as God's family, supposed to interact lovingly, we need to practice the greatest commands. And that may seem overly simplistic, but what it boils down to is, first, we need to love God. We need to love Him first. That acts as the foundation. If we don't love God, we're not going to be able to fully love and care for the people around us. We may, to some extent, be able to have those relationships and those emotions, but loving God first acts as the foundation. It's what the law and the prophets hangs on. So we need to love God first. We need to love Him primarily. And then what flows naturally from that is that we love other people as well. Even when it's hard, even when it's frustrating, even when it feels like it will hurt more than it's worth, we have to love God first and love others after that. We need to interact lovingly. If we continue in Psalm 15, picking up in verse 4, "In whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord." God's family befriends perceptively. It may seem really harsh when David says here in verse 4, "In whose eyes a vile person is despised." But what he's talking about is that we need to be able to recognize, not only in our lives, but in the lives of the people around us, good and evil. We need to be able to recognize people who are walking in God's way and people who have rejected God and are on a life and a path of sin. Seeing the lives and the actions and the attitudes of the people around us and having the ability to determine whether or not they are righteous. Those actions, those words, and their lives. So if we want to be part of God's family, what do we need to do to befriend perceptively? Well, simply put, we need to seek one, and we need to avoid the other. And again, that sounds harsh when it's coming out of my mouth, but David isn't just saying here, hey, you just need to recognize in people's lives when they're good and they're evil, and that's it. It doesn't end there. We're supposed to do something with that information. If we look back at Psalm 1, verses 1 and 2, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in what? The law of the Lord. And he meditates on it day and night. Blessed is the man who avoids these things, who avoids the people that do these things, who does not take them into his close acquaintance, into his confidence. There's a reason Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals. We need to be careful who we bring into our close company, who we allow to influence us. After all, Paul writes in 2 Timothy, when he's writing to Timothy, he says, but understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. It still sounds harsh coming out of Paul's mouth. But what he's saying is we have to be able to recognize when someone's life falls into this category so that we do not allow them to influence us. If we're going to befriend perceptively, we need to seek out the good counsel and seek out the good companions and avoid the others. Let's continue in Psalm 15, verse 4. The end of verse 4. Who swears to his own hurt and does not change. The family of God vows faithfully. The person being described here in verse 4 says what he means and he does not go back on his word. This person that David's describing here could be described as Jesus said in Matthew 5 during the Sermon on the Mount, let your yes be yes and your no, no. What's being described is someone who is trustworthy, whose words are dependable, their actions can be depended on, who vows to his own hurt and does not go back on his word. So, what does that mean for us? If we want to be a part of God's family, it means that we need to speak true to our intentions. The best, the fastest, the easiest way to make sure that our words and our actions can be trusted and depended on is to only say them if we mean them. If we only say what we mean, it's going to be a whole lot easier to fulfill those commitments and to back up that yes and that no. So if we don't want to make the commitment, if we don't want to make that promise, then let's not. That is the quickest, fastest, easiest way for our word to be trustworthy and our actions to be dependable. But we also have to act according to our speech, act true to our speech. Once we have made a commitment, once we have said yes, once we have said no, once we have made that promise, we need to act in accordance to it. As it says here in verse 4, even to our own hurt, even if we aren't feeling like it anymore, even if we don't like that we made that commitment, we have. And so we need to stick to it. We need to carry through on it. That's the characteristic of a member of God's family. We need to vow faithfully. And then lastly, going to verse 5 of Psalm 15, who does not put out his money at interest and does not take a bribe against the innocent? Members of God's family need to deal honestly. The first thing we need to recognize about what David writes here in the Psalms is both things he mentions in the verse are against the law, against Jewish law. In Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 19, the law says, "You shall not charge interest on loans to your brother, interest on money, interest on food, interest on anything that is lent for interest." It was against the old law to charge interest. And then Deuteronomy 16, 19, "You shall not pervert justice, you shall not show partiality, and you shall not accept a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and subverts the cause of the righteous. Justice and only justice you shall follow." And so what's being described by David here in Psalm 15, verse 5, is a person who has a respect for the law and abides in the law, and also deals honestly with other people. The emphasis here in this specific verse is situations where being dishonest, where taking advantage of people, would lead directly to profit. Mistreating people leading to profit. Imagine that. And he says, the family of God does not do that. They don't charge interest. They don't try to take advantage of somebody in need. They don't accept a bribe. They don't profit at the expense of justice, as he says there in verse 20. Justice and only justice you shall follow. They deal honestly. And so as the family of God, what we need to do is first, we need to respect people. In situations where our pride is at stake, or there's a profit to be made, it's easy to stop seeing people as people. And if we stop seeing people as people, no wonder we feel just fine taking advantage of them. And if you're like me, you may think, well, the world of gouging people's bank accounts or you know, accepting a bribe, I mean, I'm not a judge, I'm not on a jury. That world may seem really far away to us. But I'll just throw out one specific example, and maybe you can relate to it. Have you ever been sitting there in front of your keyboard, and you've typed out a very long comment, a good tongue lashing for somebody on the internet, a friend, a person you know? Have you ever stopped and considered right before hitting that, why you're doing what you're doing? Are you doing it because you'll get a few likes on your comment from other people on the thread that agree with you? Are you doing it because you'll get this sense of like public approval? Other people will just back you up and say, yeah, way to tell them. What have we just done? We've accepted the bribe of public approval. We've accepted the bribe of people liking us or agreeing with us or thinking we're all that, we're just on top of things. And the price was simply throwing our brother under the bus. My point simply is that accepting a bribe doesn't have to literally mean I have some sort of legislative or judicial power and someone gives me money. We can accept bribes of character all the time. So we need to respect people as people and recognize them as God's creation, people created in the image of God. And then we also need to respect God's law. If we want to deal honestly as the family of God is described here in Psalm 15, we have to respect God's law. We have to respect its authority in our lives. We have to respect what it has to say in any area of our life. No matter what we want to do, no matter whatever we are trying to accomplish, we have to respect God's law as authoritative. Or else we can't deal honestly. There's no dealing honestly outside of God's truth. David's conclusion here at the end of Psalm 15. He says, "He who does these things shall never be moved." In other words, if we go back to verse 1, he's asking, who gets to sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell on your holy hill? God, who's a part of your household? Who's a part of your family? But he says at the end that he who does these things will never be moved. This is a description of someone who not only gets to be with God for a time, but the person who gets to be with God forever, who gets to stay where God is. If you want to put it this way, they get to call the presence of God home. They get to call heaven, the very presence of God, being with him for eternity, home. Because they are a part of God's family. And so the question for us, as we leave this room, go to our Bible classes, we shift gears, the question that needs to stick in our minds is, do we want to be who God has called us to be? Because we want to be a part of God's family. I think that's why we're here this morning. We are a part of God's family. But are we being who he has called us to be in passages such as Psalm 15? Thoughts to consider as we go to our Bible classes. I appreciate your attention. We'll have a prayer and a song and be dismissed.